Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Rob, the game a couple of weeks ago against France, that appeared to be physical, but how physical was it being out there on the pitch yourself?
It was quite physical, because even though it kind of looks like a normal like pitch that we played on before, it was actually like it was concrete, so it was like a shiny concrete, as I can't remember who said it. I think it was Seb who actually said it. It was shiny concrete. So it was actually, it hurt when you actually felt to the floor. But it was a lot more brutal, really. You got to think about, we're in France's hometown, well, home country. So they wanted to put on a show, and they wanted to put on a show in the most brutal way that they could. But in end up, it turns out that we might have actually won that battle, really.
I mean, they've spoken a lot about the physicality of England in the past, but when was the last England player to be sin-bin? Have you seen one sin-bin in your time in the squad?
League side, yes. Because I think the last one from the league side was probably myself against Catalan earlier on this year. international side, no. No, I wasn't. I hadn't seen an international player be sin-bin yet, and let's hope we don't have to from an England side.
I mean, how dangerous was that chance? Because obviously it was on you. You were there feeling the brunt of it.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I spoke to the England. Well, we spoke to the England doctor who was there just in case anything did happen. And he said that thankfully, because as professional players, we do know how to basically move, like shift our weight to basically stop us from like basically landing on our head and being out for about 6 months. So we basically take the brunt on, like for me, for instance, I shifted my weight to my shoulder. But we always try and like shift our weight away from our head. So like when we fall backwards, we like basically tuck our chin in. So it's mainly our back that's taking the most brunt. It was a bad challenge. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Thankfully, an inexperienced player could have got hurt by that. I would much prefer that hit to happen to myself, because either way, you see it on the video, I get knocked down, I just get straight back up, and I make sure none of my teammates do anything. That can get them taken off as well. Obviously, we wanted to. Our main aim was have each of us back in that game, and that's what the rest of the boys did. We all had each of us back during that game, during stuff like that, and that's why it's a great team to be a part of, because it's Band of Brothers end of the day, and they had my back when that challenge happened.
What lessons did you learn from the first game going into the second game?
I think I've said this a couple of times. I think I've said it to like different people. I don't know if we got too confident about where we were. We were in First Direct Arena, or we basically didn't give them enough respect, give France enough respect on the day. And I think that's why it showed that we didn't play up to our full potential. And it kind of created what Tom Coyle likes to call humble FC, because in that game we got massively humbled to show that, right, we can be this amazing team, but if we slack off or if we give them a bit too much respect, then it can go completely the other way and we get humbled and embarrassed, really. Speaking from my own point of view, I really think that I felt embarrassed after that game, because it wasn't the strongest game that I know I could play myself. Especially, I've got one try in my head where I came off my wing and gave Jeremy about a good 8 meter length on that wing just to push straight through. And we've seen Jeremy play with the potential he has and the power that he has just to push his chair. He is an amazing player. And it just shows that you give him a little bit of space and it can cause him basically breaking the line and scoring a try.
But professional sport's about, you know, learning from your mistakes, isn't it? You're not never going to have probably the perfect performance, but as long as you learn from your mistakes and going into your next game, which is what you did for game two, clearly you put that probably attitude maybe right as a collective, and hopefully that'll stand the squad in good stead going forward into next year. I mean, speaking of next year, when is the next England game? Do we know?
Nothing's been confirmed yet. There's nothing that I can really say, because even I don't know when the next England game is. I just wait for an email or a call saying, look, be here on this time and this day. And I just show up. Like, literally, when I know, you guys know at the same time. Like, we're getting told the same time. It gets released in press even before we get told sometimes. Like, it's mental sometimes, the amount of times. But yeah,
I can believe that, Rob.
Yeah. It is one of those things really where I would love to say, right, we've got a game in like a few months time, but like sadly there's nothing in calendar at the minute except just enjoy off season and keep working for the league.
Well, this is the equality we've all been working towards. England's men's, women's, wheelchair teams, no idea when they're playing that. So, you know, we're all on a level playing field here, so to speak. Now, as we record this, the Golden Boot is going to be announced in Australia at, I don't know, 10:30 their time. I don't know what time that is, ours. So this is the way things work in broadcasting, is I'm going to ask you about both players, Rob, and then we're going to pretend they've both won it. And then when we know who has won it, we'll put that clip out. So yeah. Because you played with them both, of course, for England with Lewis and for Halifax with Jeremy. Let's talk about the Frenchman. And you say you let him score a try. You know, your mistake caused him to score a try against England in that test. Have you handed him the Golden Boot then in that sense?
No, not a chance. Not a chance. Jeremy played amazing in that first game. But the comparison to the second game was, I think, it's a bit tough to say because obviously I've watched it back, but I haven't watched it back at the same time. With the whole French squad, they lost their head very quickly with that game, and I think that's what caused Jeremy to like kind of not be as strong and impactful as he was in that first game. It is one of those things where you like James said, you will never have a perfect game, and we like, I know I was saying that if Jeremy has a very strong game, he's going to be a very tough person to face. And I think that first game, if I had to choose between the two games, Jeremy's strongest game was his first game. Because I feel like he didn't make as much of an impact as he did in that first game. In that first game, he was a run threat. He was just a threat anywhere. And you always have to keep an eye on him. While that second game, we adjusted our game and we shut him down from the first minute when he got that ball. Like, we shut him down, and you saw it, that first carry, Josh put him into touch. That straight off the bat, where the first carry of the game, and you're already turning over the ball, that does a lot of things to your mindset. And I think that's where it turns a good player into a great player, about learning to basically switch off your emotions and basically just go to that next job mentality. And don't get me wrong, Jeremy can do that. But I think it was a bit of a, obviously I haven't spoke to him, so I could be wrong on this, but it's that thing of how we felt at Leeds, where it probably the home crowd got to him and kind of basically too overhyped him, really. Like, I know it did for me. Like, when I was in Leeds, I heard the crowd and I'm like, this is amazing, I love this. I was too busy thinking about other things than doing my job. And I think that's where your head can go, really. So it's about learning how to become that great player to basically shut all that out and just concentrate on what's in front of you.
So if he hasn't won it, then Lewis King has. What's he like to play with, and of course against, when he's playing for the Roosters?
Amazing player to play with. He's definitely a player that you need on your team. To play against, wow, I can't say the word I really want to. He's annoying. I'll put it in a very polite word. He's very annoying. Because you've seen it, like, I don't know, because I've had one of these tries scored past me, you can smack him into touch, and yet that ball's still down over the line before he's in touch. He's done one against me, he did one in Leeds where caster wheels were still up in the air. And honestly, that was a beautiful call. Both were beautiful calls by the referees, because without video ref, you don't know how to call that. You've got to trust your other referees with you. And say they have to do that by the naked eye without any replay whatsoever. That is very impressive. And that's one thing I can't discredit about the referees, and also Lewis as well. Like, Lewis has turned into an amazing player, his most consistent player this year. But the referees being able to make decisions like that is amazing. But obviously, the referees are not Golden Boot nominations, sadly. But either way, like I said, Lewis is the most consistent player I've seen all season long in anything he does. And I think it's definitely going to be a tough one for for them to actually vote on a winner for this one.
See, James, where's the golden whistle? Why is that not announced today? Is that not going on?
They used to have an international award, I think, for referees. I'm not sure what happened to that. I never got it, that's for sure.
we probably run out of money. We can't afford them. Were you at Leeds, James? I can't remember if you were at that game or
no. I couldn't watch the game. I watched the game on iPlayer, and I was blown away by it. I mean, the games that were on that weekend, that was the one of the three games that were on, the men, the women's, and the wheelchair. That was the one game that held my attention. I love it. I must admit, it was a shame I couldn't get that live, because I would love to see one live. But I think what we talked about on the podcast before, it's just, it is rugby league, which is, you recognise it as the sport that we all love. But at the same time, it's completely different. But I just love it. I just think it's the skill level. And I know people talk about the intensity and the physicality, which is, you know, goes without saying, but the skill level is immense, as you talked about, you know, players diving in at the corner and how they're able to get that pass away and then sort of, again, the podcast, this won't be great, but evading in your chair with your body movement to avoid the tag being ripped. I love it.
These tags now, I've learned things because I don't know anything. I'm very naive, but were you trying to slow the play down in that first game, Rob? Because you're obviously on the pitch, you can tell. Were you trying to slow down the pulling of the tags from the French shoulders?
It's the dark arts of the game. That is something that's within our game. It is the dark arts that we have to use, because obviously you can't, it's not as like the running game where you can kind of hold them down and just basically be on that line before the ref blows the whistle for a penalty. For us, we have to find a way that we can slow that down. And yes, that does involve flowing, basically holding on to the tag for a few seconds, basically making them have to be the one to take it off to actually. We have to find those, basically those little 1%ers that can basically give us enough time to get back on side, because we're only going back 4 meters. It's a short distance, but you got to think about how quickly players can actually tag up and play the ball. If they have like a player that's literally right then there, you're catching someone offside or with the back turned, and it can really, if you slow that down, it can really help between either going back further than what you want to do, or basically stopping them 2 meters, 2 meters short of that 4 meter line. It can vary. So yeah, it is something that we do put into our game plan, because it's, like I said, it's those little 1%ers that can help us a lot more in defense.
Some call it dark art, some call it comic referees, but I'll let the audience decide which one they. You must have enjoyed being conned, James, all the time by every single player on every single team.
Yeah, regularly. But it's great to see that actually what you're talking about there is almost like ruck speed, isn't it, in the sort of running game, and how critical, you know, effectively the play the ball process is. You know, if you can keep a defensive side on the roll and you keep going on an attack, then, you know, you've got a greater opportunity to score.
Yeah, it's definitely something that looks like basically stops it a lot more. You've seen players like Jeremy. I'll go on to him because he's one of the most annoying players for it. All it takes is a quick play at ball, and all he has to do is just smash into a chair and then reach over them and just put the ball down. He's tall, so he can do it. All tall players are just really effective for that. And I think that's what helps us. If we can slow that play at ball down, it stops players like Jeremy, Jack as well, from just doing plays like that where they can just reach over while you're getting set on your line.
What's your view, Rob, on the sort of this philosophical debate between sort of the French and the English that was sort of played out in the documentary that I watched? around, you know, able-bodied and disabled athletes in the sport, and you know how the sport should look, really.
Yeah, so I know. I think we actually spoke about it before, Richard, about because I think it was just after it released. My whole point of it is the sport is basically titled as the most inclusive sport in the world for a reason. You have family members playing this game together. I'll use Declan Roberts and Phil, his dad Phil, both played for separate nations, both played in the World Cup. You've got Jack Brown and you've got his brother Harry. Jack Brown, an able-bodied player, and his brother Harry, when he was younger, played rugby. Both of them played internationally for England and won a European won the Euros together. Without that inclusivity, you don't have those stories about my family member plays this with me. And here's the thing, I've spoke to players that are more disabled than myself. I've spoke to Wayne, and I'll use Wayne's quote. I'll always use it. If you don't like it, go take up something like chess. I ain't heard a single disabled player from within the England squad or within the Super League complain about getting hit by an able-bodied player. Because end of the day, where you got to think about it this way, someone in a wheelchair is going to be better than an able-bodied player because they're used to being in a wheelchair a lot more often than an able-bodied person.
It's interesting you mentioned it earlier, but it's almost like in wrestling where you learn to fall. You know how to fall out of the chair to be safe, in a sense, which someone might not be if you're not a regular wheelchair user.
Yeah, definitely. Someone will just put their hands out, and then you've got that risk of, well, if I don't land well, there's something that's going to go wrong. You have to make sure that you're basically landing on the toughest part of your body, and then you're going to stop yourself from having any injuries. At most, you're going to have like a bruise or something, which is nothing. As long as you don't break anything, you're not out for a good amount of period. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The comments that were in that were completely rubbish. I don't agree with them. I think, like I stated before, without the able-bodied players, without the disabled players, without the men and the women, all these different genders and abilities, you will not have this sport today. And that's why it's so popular. That's why you've seen the taster sessions where young children want to come play this. There's a father and a son from York who play for York, and they came to an England camp, because obviously earlier on in the year we had a nice selection game, basically an origin game against Drew. We invited a lot of people to come along, and they came, and both of them, as far as I'm aware, they are able-bodied. I could be wrong with that. Obviously, you don't ask these questions, do you? And they came to that camp, and then the next week they signed up and they played for York. And I have seen them more recently still playing for York. And without that able-bodied aspect, them two wouldn't be a part of this sport. Jack Brown wouldn't be a part of this sport. All the great players that are within this game, I'm going to use someone from a different country, Nico Clausells, would not be a part of this sport if it wasn't for the inclusivity part of it. So their comments, and I'm going to get very controversial here, their comments were absolute rubbish, to put it very politely, and I don't agree with them whatsoever.
Love a straight answer. But also, they made great TV, because the documentary was great. And to me, the niggle, I don't know whether the niggle comes out of some of those comments, I'm guessing it probably does, and that makes for a great rivalry. But my question was really, I was just going to link on to what you were talking about with York and people sort of taking up the sport, because there's more and more people doing that. How easy is it, you know, to learn? And particularly if you're an able-bodied person that, you know, hasn't been in a wheelchair, doesn't know how to use a wheelchair, how easy is it to pick up?
It depends on how much effort you put in. I mean, obviously, at first, it's really difficult because you've got to learn how to push your chair and then also pass the ball. You're doing everything with your hands, while if you played the running game, you're used to just only using your hands for passing and catching. You're not used to moving as well. You've got to use that transition of, right, I'm going to catch the ball, I'm going to put it on my knee, I've got to push now. And at first, it's really tough to pick up. But the more the practice comes in, I mean, the phrase says it itself, practice makes perfect. And without that, it's going to be difficult for you to progress to a higher level and be a future international player with that.
Sounds like you've got to have coordination, which I have zero, so I would be terrible. You know, do you sort of pat your head and rub your tummy? Is that like an initial sort of test whether somebody can coordinate or sort of multitask and do two.
Yeah, I wish it were that easy. Just to determine if you could do it. Because for some reason, I can push a wheelchair and I can pass with one hand, but yeah, I still can't even do that. And I'm not even going to try. I'll test it when I'm away from a camera. That's got a recording on.
Terrible. One thing from that test match in Leeds, which amused me, because so used to watching the running game, you know, I've been watching it for 30 odd years, and it's tradition when you're playing a team that you boo whoever's kicking against you, and you know, there's still noise going on around you, and the arena going deathly silent when Nathan was trying to kick goals or whatever. You're a goal kicker. What do you prefer, noise or silence?
I try not to prefer either. Obviously, I mean, silence is bliss, but then I don't know. Like, I think you've got to expect both, really. I think I found it funny, really, because I did some kicking when we were in for the second test match. And none of the French booed me. Like, none of the French fans booed me for some reason. And then all of a sudden, when Scraps takes the kicks, and Nathan takes the kick, they start getting very loud all of a sudden. And I'm wondering, like, okay, am I, like, liked by these French people, or do they just really despise Nathan? So it's one of them, but it's you've
probably
got
the
to
latter. They don't like English people.
No, that's why I was like, I'm wondering, right? Do I have secret French heritage that they know something about that, but I don't? But I think you, as a kicker, you got to be used to both of it, really, because obviously you're gonna have people that love you, you're gonna have people that hate you. Then you just got to have the people that just enjoy to be there and just watching the game because they want to watch it. So. I mean, I'll take any, and my kicks will just be dependent on how I'm kicking on the day. So I'm not gonna say I'll definitely get them no matter what. Cause now I'll probably sky far left at post, and we'll continue on from there.
Before that first test in Leeds, I can't remember if it was you who posted a picture. It might have been Tom Halliwell. You went shopping in Manchester. What was that all about? You look very young and trendy, as the you know, someone in their 40s would say. Very trendy outfits you're all wearing.
Yeah, so we celebrated, I think, was it before? Oh, you're making me think now. I'm trying to think, was it before Leeds or was it after?
It's all blurred. The whole season's
blurred. Yeah, so yeah, it was actually after. So the final camp that we had before, the week before we actually flew out for the second test match. And we all went to Manchester because that weekend we was actually celebrating the 1 year anniversary of winning the World Cup. And pretty much I completely forgot that we were actually celebrating. I forgot we were staying over in a hotel for the night. So pretty much I needed to go out and actually get some clothes anyway. There's a rule that obviously when we do celebrate of any sort of nature, you're out of England kit. No England kit whatsoever. You can wear it if you want, but you're only allowed soft drinks and to celebrate in a nice way. I'll put it politely. So yeah, that's basically the rule that we have. And obviously, I forgot my kit. I think Jack didn't like part. I think it was like his top or something, or some pants that he brought over. He didn't like it, and then so we decided we'd take a wander around to local like clothing shops. And yeah, we grabbed some clothes and we spent some time walking around the Manchester area and past the nice Manchester Central. I forgot what it was called, and that's really bad. Past Manchester Central, and we had like a good wander, and then we had to come back to the hotel to basically watch both the documentary and the final back, which was amazing to actually watch back and just remember what we did a year ago.
What was it like watching it back then together as a group? Because, you know, the clips have been played millions of times since then, but you lived through it. You were there. You. What's it like? Is it kind of an out-of-body experience seeing yourself win a World Cup?
It's weird when you watch it with a team. So obviously, I've watched it a couple of times on my own, but then watching it with a team there, it's weird because you basically pick at every little thing as a team. And I'm surprised that we actually watched it full. In full without skipping it back a couple of times saying what actually happened here, because normally when we watch anything to review anything, we skip it back a few times just to basically see who actually did the good job on this and who's actually to blame? And funny enough, it's all like 9 times out of 10, it's always Seb saying, can we go back and look at this very quick? Unless it's something bad that he's done, then he will just want it to play through. So love Seb to bits, but wow, he's he loves having a look at everyone else's mistakes that they made.
That's perfectionism for you. That's the problem with that. And it's a year on. How would you sum up 2023? Obviously a different year, but ending with a win.
Ending with a win, but there's still progress to be made. So we're not content with the, I'm not content with this year. I've got a lot of things to improve on, and stuff's already in the works. I'm already changing part of my game up for next season. So that's going to be a nice adaptation for me, because I've got to adapt to it myself now. So it's going to be interesting, but we'll see how it comes, and just keep progressing, because we've got until, I think, is it 2026 now until World Cup? Yeah, 2026. So we still got a long 3 years ahead of us, and it's all time to basically improve and keep going from there.
Forgive my ignorance, Rob, but what's the sort of training regime for, you know, when you play for the Panthers, don't you? What's your sort of typical training regime in the week?
So, for me personally, it's up, basically waking up at about 5:30 in the morning to get to the gym at 6 o'clock. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then, if I'm going off of last season's training days, we train on a Friday night, 7 till 9 with Halifax. And then if we had a game, we played on the weekends. But during pre-season, it's always just conditioning, just normal pre-season training. We're just working on the stuff that we need to basically just get back with us, since we haven't, just learning to basically replay again, not like massively, but just like getting used to everything again, getting used to the intensity, all that stuff. But when it comes into like just before, a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before the start of the season, that's when we get into the serious stuff, where it's like, right, we need to start working on this. And we just work throughout our whole season plan, really, of what we're going to do, what the aims for the season are. Myself, I look for the aims of the season, and all of it is just to try to win. Obviously, I want to win a trophy at least every year. This season just gone, we won European Championship. The season before that, we won a grand final. It'd be nice to win a Challenge Cup this next season, just to even it out. But any trophy, any silverware we can get, I'll take.
And how have you seen the development of the sport in the time that you've been involved? And I suppose, where do you see it, or where would you like to see it head?
So development of sport's gone up a lot higher. You've seen, it's getting constantly like promoted on social media about different teams wanting to basically start their own teams. Also, you've got current teams that are available starting up their own development teams, and also put them into the championships team, which is, in an essence, that development and championship squads are the next generation of Super League players, and possibly next generation of international players as well. So I enjoy bringing players up in Super League. I know I've done it. I've done it for one player this year, and I've said to him from day one, he has potential, but he has to work. And it's a very serious thing, where obviously myself, Wayne, and all the experienced players are trying to help all these new players out as best as we can. Tom Martin is leading the Halifax squad's championship and development training, and also their game days, alongside Nathan Holmes. So we want to do anything that we can to basically be the best team in the country once again. We haven't had that title for a little while. Probably the most successful team, in my eyes, we are the most successful team, but the best team, I'd say, in last few years. We haven't been that team, and I want to get back up to that that stage and that title.
I'm just all I've had in my mind for the last few minutes is images of, because it's pre-season for the running teams, the men's teams, and you see them all doing cross-country runs. And all I'm seeing is a bunch of wheelchairs going over the hills somewhere, just I'm guessing you don't have to do anything like that, any nonsense like that, because that'll put me off straight away.
Not over the hills, but it's definitely a lot of work in gym that you have to put in. And I think for myself, I've got I can't think of anywhere better than being in a gym, especially early in the morning. It just prepares me for a day, gets me in a nice mood, and I know I've done well if I've basically come out of that gym in the morning and it's the sun's only just coming up sometimes, and I honestly love it. I hate myself later on in the day because I'm honestly just thinking, right, why do I keep doing this to myself? But it's always a nice reminder that the reason why I do this is to play internationally and basically keep getting those England caps and playing the sport I love in general and inspiring the next generation of players to basically play in the same position that I have and experience the same things that I have.
Great to hear that you're giving back to the game as well as sort of performing at the highest level. And just on your training, are you getting guidance, you know, in terms of the, you know, the strength and conditioning that you do? And again, I guess touching what Richard said, we used to have to do, you know, yo-yo fitness tests regularly, sort of pre-season, during the season. I'm guessing a fitness test for a wheelchair athlete, is there such a thing?
We did try one a few years ago. I think it was 2019. No, it was actually during lockdown time. Like, I think it was 2020, 2021. We did, during the camp, we did a basic wheelchair version of like a bleep test. We hadn't done it for a while, though. I think it was just like a conditioning thing that we did during camp. There isn't really anything that we do. Like, we have our own versions of conditioning. So I know for Halifax wise, we just do a specific, we do basically pushing for a specific amount of time. Sometimes it can be up to like 6-7 minutes, and it can be like about 5 sets, and honestly, it killed you because that runs through the 2 hours, and that's your conditioning done for that one, for that week. And it's grueling because honestly, it's that thing of, right, I need to keep my head on, because the first thing that goes when you're tired is your mind. So you have to basically just try and teach it again to keep going, keep like looking around, talk. So as you're passing that clock, if you're the player that's passing that clock, you've got to shout how long's left to the rest of the team to keep your mind switched on. Or like, right, I need to do this, I need to do that. Outside of it, I have an amazing personal trainer with an ex-running rugby player from Halifax called Damien Gibson. So he's been helping me since during lockdown, really. So he's helping me, keeping me in the best shape possible. And it's good to have that like experience from a player who's been in my position, where he's playing for a hometown, and basically helping teaching next generation players, because he's had some future players playing coming into his gym as well for running game who want to be at that level. He's helped them kind of teach like what you should do, always keeping your mind on things. And I think that's the best part, really. If you can't play anymore, you can teach that next generation of players. It's giving back to the community.
It's far too worthy a statement to end this program on. So I'll say to people that for the podcast listeners, while you were talking about working out in the gym and being there at 5:30, and James is nodding along, and I'm nodding along as well, but I'm nodding along kind of politely, because, you know, just to mention the word bleep tests, I mean, cold sweats from memories of school, but that was a long time ago. Rob, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us throughout the season as well, and your time is much appreciated. And we'll do this again next year if you haven't got sick of us.
No, I'm always happy to come on. It's always a great conversation to actually come and speak about the game, and it's always great to do it. I'm always happy.
James, you got anything left to add before time?
No, it's just you know, the enthusiasm that I've got for the wheelchair. I think it's infectious. I love the documentary. I love watching the sport. So just keep doing what you're doing, and you're obviously doing a good job. It's great to see that you know working on bits, and you're not content to sort of with your performances, you're continuing to sort of improve. And so best of luck for next season.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
We'll get him in a chair by the end of the year and give it a go. I'm injured now. I've injured my thumb, so I can't steer the chair and throw a ball.
I'm in my office chair, so I can spin round, but that's about it. It's not good enough. It's got wheels on, but
Chair rugby league. That's the future. Rob, thanks for your time, and we'll catch up next year.
That's great. Thank you very much. Have a nice Christmas, guys.
40-20. Oh, how about that?
First things first, Emily. Why York?
So Taylor moved over to York and signed a deal over here. And at first he was going to travel, so he was going to go from Lee to York. But obviously in the months that he were there, and then obviously the months he was there, it was just hard work coming home, and the travel was like 2 hours when the motorway was shut, and it was just not doable. Well, it is doable, but it's not convenient. And then Clint come through with like an offer, we would like you here, or if you're up for it, you can can have a chat. So I took him up on it, and I spoke with Taylor and stuff, weighed it all up, and it just seemed the right thing to do. When if we could do it together, doing it together is a bit of a dream, really. So just thought, let's give it a shot. And it's a good club and they have good morals, so and they've been really welcoming. So that's why I chose York.
And obviously there's lots of positives about York, but it must have been difficult to leave St Helens as well.
Yeah, it was probably the hardest decision I've had to make. I spent a lot of time there. I grew up there, and pretty much so. And the girls at Saints are the reason really why I fell in love with rugby. I was comfortable there. Whereas I wanted, when this come about, it's a new challenge, and I think to become a better player and a better person, you need new challenges. So can't just sit comfortably. That's why I did it. But definitely was hard to leave Saints. Definitely hard. I think the staff, the people there, like 10% of me were still there even when I had made my decision, just because of obviously the people I had there. But yeah. It was very hard.
You mentioned it's a new challenge. I guess the first one will be to break into the York team, because although given your standing in the game, you're joining the champions, so that won't be easy.
No. I think obviously I'm going to have to work hard, and I think my main goal is to get a wing spot, because obviously I know that they had really strong wingers, and they've shown in the grand final that they've got a good back line. So yeah, I think just getting into pre-season, working hard, putting the graft in, and hopefully getting better, learning off the players around me, gelling with the group, and then hopefully I'll get my shot.
You mentioned that you're joining a progressive club, which is not to say that St Helens isn't, but clearly York have gain the headlines with their offering of professional contracts to their players. Again, was that part of your decision, or does that just justify your decision?
No. So obviously it is a factor of your decision, because, I've never had that before. But it's not that I weren't, Saints weren't offering that, because that was coming at Saints. Obviously the fact that Taylor was over here, and he found a house, and him going through that process, I wanted to do it with him, and that was probably the main factor. And then I came into York, had a look around, and it's a nice place, it's a nice city. So yeah, that bit was appealing. The money side of things, it's appealing, but it weren't why I made the decision to move. But obviously, it does help.
What's the most exciting thing you've found about York then so far, as a place to live more than as a place to play rugby?
So Taylor found a really nice house. Went and had a look around with him and everything, and then to move over here, I needed a job, and I found a job with a distillery called Hoo & Owl, who are moving into the centre of York as like a tourist attraction. So that was quite an exciting job offer, and it was better than what I had at home, and the opportunity to possibly go to uni back over here. All those all those positive factors that come up was just the reason why I thought, yeah, it seems right. So I'm going to go for it, bite the bullet and do it.
So you've got to balance rugby, work and being a student as well. I mean, how do you get time to do anything else?
So when I was a student, so I did a year and a half and then I took the year out. It was hard. I know a lot of girls do it, but you're trying to work full time to get a good wage. You're trying to be a professional athlete. You're trying to put all the time into the gym, away from training, what you eat, what you do. So yeah, it is tough, but it is doable.
And you're probably one of the biggest transfers we've seen in the domestic women's game. Obviously, transfer in the loosest sense of the word, in that no fees being paid at the moment. But there's quite a few players moving around between the top clubs. Is that an indication, do you think, of how strong the top end of the women's game is now becoming?
Yeah, I think obviously at first it's more a loyalty thing. So like you're staying at the club for the group that you're with and the people around you. But yeah, I think the game is only getting better, and the move of the pay and everything like that is going to make the moves more frequent and more often, because there's going to be better offers. And, you know, and sometimes that overrides things, because, you know, it's not just your life at rugby and a little bit of a pay, like a bit of pocket money. It's actually like something sustainable. Like, you know, they're coming through with jobs that around this area from sponsors and things like that. So that makes it, you know, a viable move and something that progresses you in life, not just, you know, on the field.
And on the field, you've gained a reputation of scoring tries in the big games. I would imagine that that's another reason why York have found your signing very attractive to them.
I mean, I spoke with Lindsay and she was like, you know, we'd love to have you down here. She's been really welcoming. You know, if I ever need to text her or ring her about anything, she's there. So, yeah, we spoke about, obviously, how I'm going to get into the team. And she was like, I think the wing spot's your spot. If you work hard and show me that, you know, you can do it. But, yeah, I think, obviously, I've had the team at Saints around me, you know, to dish me the ball, to put it down over the try line. Yeah, I think obviously the positives of my game will suit York, so that's why they probably have been really keen to have me.
Up until last October, we used to talk about York not being able to win big games, but now they've won a grand final. The next thing we've got to say is they haven't won the Challenge Cup yet, but you have twice. What was it like playing Ellen Road, first of all, in that final a couple of years ago and scoring two tries?
I get asked this question a lot and they say, how did you feel when you scored? But I just feel like I always used the word buzzing, but like you are, you just, you know, you're in your element. But yeah, at Ellen Road, I was very like naive to the game. I didn't know the rules, didn't really. I was just, you know, winging it, literally. And yeah, it was a taste of what I could do and actually I was capable of doing. Yeah, and it gave me the drive to want to do more and want to, you know, be a better player. And yeah, give me the motivation. And then obviously playing at Wembley was unreal. Can't get any better. To be honest, I think I just love the Challenge Cup more. I mean, I would like to win a grand final because that's one thing I haven't done yet. I played in a grand final. But yeah, Challenge Cup is a special one, especially now it's at Wembley.
And you made your England debut as well in between those finals as well. What else can you achieve now? You've done pretty much everything apart from win the grand final.
No, I still think there's a lot for me to achieve. You know, I'm still quite young and I've still got a lot of improvement that I can make. Obviously, I need to put the work in to do that. But yeah, you know, it's not easy to get into the England squad and there's a lot of players playing for that position and training for that position. So, yeah, I think obviously it's a win that I've got them two games, but I'm not gifted the next, so I'm going to have to really work, you know, hard to get that. So, yeah, I think there is still a lot to achieve. So, because even being picked is a big achievement. So, you know, there's always the next selection as an achievement or the next, you know, game or whatever.
Do you watch the NRLW? Because again, Georgia Roach has come back, having made a huge success of it. The other two girls that are out there, Fran and Holly, again, have been enhancing their reputation. Do you watch that and think that's the kind of standard I'd like to get up to?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they are top players and it's a lot faster physical and they're more athletic. Yeah, it is something I do look at and think, oh, imagine if I could do that. I think there's a long way to go till that, but hopefully one day it's a possibility.
And talking of sort of ambitions, 2025 is earmarked for the England women's team to travel over to Australia and play a test series. Is that sort of circled in pencil in your calendar, that's the aim and objective of doing the best you can for York to be on that tour?
Yeah, I have it in the back of my mind. I like to not think of things too much and make it a reality till I actually get it. So, yeah, it is in the back of my mind, but I wouldn't say I'm like, I need to be there because I want to be there, don't get me wrong, but I don't make it a reality till I get it. Does that make sense? So, yeah, no, it would be amazing if I could make that. And I do everything I can to obviously progress into that. But yeah, it's in the back of my mind.
Which of those York players in the England squad are you looking forward most to playing alongside? Who have you got on with the most in England camps in the past?
So I've only been in two. So last camp when we played Wales, obviously I got to know the girls a little bit more and I think Lacey's a laugh and Tam's in and Tara, like, you know, I didn't really know them in the past, but now I've got to know them a bit more. They're all easy to get on with. So, yeah, I think I'm looking forward to playing, hopefully, with Tam's in because I'm used to that. Training with her, at, obviously, England. So that would be good if we could duo up. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting to know all the girls. I think they're a good bunch and they've all been really welcoming. So I'm just looking forward to getting into pre-season now and get the work into action.
When those fixtures come out for whenever it is for the Women's Super League, are you looking forward to going back to St. Helens? What's the feelings going to be like playing against your former teammates?
I really don't know. I think I have thought about it and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like I don't even know how I'm going to cope. Like I'll probably look at them and think, oh. but no, I think what I need to do is put all the past to the back of my mind and just focus on what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm going to, you know, it's going to be weird at first, but I'm sure I'll get used to it. I'm sure I'll get used to it.
You've got the backdrop of the stadium behind you. Obviously, you must have had a tour around those facilities. You'll have seen that they've been used for World Cups and Grand Finals. How exciting is that? Because I know, obviously, Saints, as often as they could, allowed you to play at the TWS, but this is quite a boutique stadium and perhaps even the future of rugby league clubs moving forward.
Yeah, so I'm doing a bit of social media training here for the job that I'm going to be doing, which is nice. So, yeah, I've had a tour. I haven't had a tour of the training facilities yet, but the stadium, yeah, it is a nice stadium. And, yeah, I'm excited to play it.
Brilliant. Well, good luck with it all. Hopefully you'll come back on once you've started playing and let us know how it feels and how successful you've been. And if we can do anything from this end, just let us know. If you need social media training, Richard's an expert on it.
I'm just learning CapCut and all the TikTok things because, yeah, I came in and it was like, how much? I'm starting from the bottom. like it takes me half an hour to write a caption on Instagram. So, yeah, I'm learning and thank you.
That's more advanced than I am. Ebony, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the time at York and enjoy the city as well.
Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.